Hey, everybody. If you've ever stopped at a railway crossing and the signals are flashing and you don't see the train or it looks like it's moving slow and you're thinking maybe you can get across the tracks before the train comes, well, think about this. In 2018 alone, 270 people were killed at railroad crossings. 270. Stop. Trains can't.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Was drafted first overall.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
The 2019 NFL Draft, round one in the books from Nashville. We are here in Southern California, where we watched all of the action together. It was very cute, all four of us in our little quad cubicles, watching each of the 32 picks. And Greg, you know, put it all, paint a picture for us. When you think about the round one in 2019, this NFL draft, paint a picture for us.
I mean, I think the most memorable moment.
Paint that picture
for me, and I think for a lot of people coming out of this draft. Came with the number six pick on the draft. Now, most, you know, on the board, most people were not in line getting barbecue at the huddle, which I was at the time, in which many Giants fans were quite upset when the pick.
They lost their lunch.
They were not happy when they took Daniel Jones. But ultimately, in a round one that had its interesting moments, but maybe not like crazy sizzle moments, I think we'll remember it as the draft of Dave Gettleman and Daniel Jones and the fact that they ended up with three picks only adds to that.
I'm still reeling from your introductory train safety update, which a lot to unpack there. But there was a particular Giants fan we work with. I don't want to call him out.
It's a very
name.
Important cause for me.
It is. Well, it's in those 257 people in there.
Well, now you're making light of something.
I'm not.
Actually,
that is a real issue. But the
nice wormhole, bro.
We have someone who works with us who is a massive Giants fan, and he is in Nashville
still?
For the draft. And he seemed quite nonplussed. The video showed when Daniel Jones was selected. But then 5 minutes later, there's a picture of said employee with Daniel Jones at the draft. And he suddenly changed his tune to some degree. So,
it's interesting. And, you know, I guess I would be the guy if there was someone in the studio that was giving Dave Gettleman the benefit of the doubt entering this draft. Certainly it would be me because there's a lot of Gettleman / Giant haters on this podcast. It is what it is. It's not a big deal. I don't care one way or the other. But the truth of the matter is, coming out of this draft, and again, we don't know. Daniel Jones could be a 15-year starter for all we know.
He could end up winning
two Super Bowl MVPs. Like, that could happen. But where he was taken, which everyone is seeing as a reach, when you think about what happened last year, when, of course, the Giants at number two took the running back when you had all these quarterback prospects on the board. And then they followed up with Dexter Lawrence at pick 17, a defensive tackle out of Clemson. They trade back into the first round late at 30 to get DeAndre Baker, the first cornerback off the board. But they gave up quite a bit to get back into the first round. And what you lose most of all, if the Giants, what you lose is the benefit of the doubt from your fan base, from the football cognoscenti. Of course, but your fan base does not trust you or believe in anything you do, so you're getting killed. Check out the New York back pages and front pages on Friday morning. It is a complete black cloud over the Giants right now, and they're going to have to earn the trust back of their fans.
This was the day where they also lost Mike Francesa of WFAN, so I feel that's a pivotal
moment.
That
is true. Actually, we have the moment after the Jones pick, which Francesa killed because he has been supporting Gettleman and Eli and all that. This is what Mike Francesa, the famous sports radio guy in New York, was reduced to ahead of the Giants' second pick.
With the 17th pick of the first round, the New York Football Giants, who can't get out of their own way, who finished last in their division in consecutive seasons for the first time since 76, 77, will select blah, blah, blah.
He's broken. They broke Mike Francesa.
I mean, there is something fitting here about Gettleman replacing the Odell Beckham pick with like a 344-pound hog molly. Like that's who he is. That's who he likes. And the fact that Daniel Jones, who maybe he will work out. Who knows? I mean, he has an atypical track record for a guy taken in the top 10. But the fact that he looks like Eli Manning, he kind of acts like Eli Manning. He's
with less pizzazz.
He's a poor man's Eli Manning in terms of the way he plays. He's got the connection with the coach. And it's just they brought Gettleman back because they knew Gettleman to be the general manager to replace the old, disgraced or not disgraced, but, under fire general manager. They always sort of do the safe thing.
Well, in the quote of the night, all these Manning ties to Daniel Jones's Duke coach, David Cutcliffe, who said tonight, Daniel Jones embraces something we believe in here. Real swag is no swag. That's what you want your quarterback to have. Just
real
to
swag
roll
is
in
no swag.
With no sweat.
That's a new phrase. Another phrase is Gettleman always says, you can't reach for the pick. You'll kill yourself if you reach for the pick. And he's like, you can't take for positional need. And it really feels like after they passed on a quarterback, they reached for positional need. He said he was not willing to risk Jones being there at 17. And that's the other thing that strikes me with this pick is that the NFC East, the next 5 years or so change with these picks. Cause the buzz was, there was a chance at least that the Redskins would take Jones, especially if Dwayne Haskins was gone before them. So it could have been the Giants taking Haskins and then the Redskins taking Jones, and we'll see.
Or either one of them taking Josh Rosen.
And you get the sense, the Eagles are sitting back there at 22 picking up, one of the, maybe the top pass protecting tackle in the draft, thinking like, oh, this is great. We're going to face these guys for the next 5 years.
So there's a lot to unpack, obviously, in the first round of the draft. So let's start digging into it a little bit more. So we covered some of the Giants, and I'm sure we'll hit the Giants more at some point because they picked three times in the round. They weren't the only team to do that. It was the Oakland Raiders that also had three picks as they continue the rebuild or build with John Gruden and I guess Mike Mayock. But let's start at the very top of the draft. Let's dig into it with the first overall pick. It was indeed Kyler Murray of Oklahoma. A lot of the hay was not in the barn, Cliff Kingsbury said earlier this week, but it was ultimately because they cut to the war room right before the pick was made. Nobody was even moving.
What
odd.
What do we think that this was all about, by the way? I'd like to ask this to the group.
What was what about?
The whole hay wasn't in the barn, all these reports, and a lot of people, including Kent Summers, who covers the team closer than anyone, actually believing that they wouldn't take the quarterback. Like, what was all this? What was all that?
Internal power struggle?
The only thing I can come up with is that even in the 6 years that we've been doing this podcast, the lead up to the draft has become huge business compared to what it was. It is now like a mega business, not just a cottage industry. So the NFL wants them to keep it as interesting as possible.
Or work. There's another simple explanation that they really weren't sure that there was Nick Bosa or whoever else. Nick Bosa ended up going number two to the Niners. Maybe there was legitimate, maybe it wasn't a power struggle even. Just like they had a big decision to make and they had
like
Josh
was
Ross,
there
Rosen
was there maybe
the
a
building.
Price that they could have gotten from the Raiders that they actually would have traded the pick and they were seeing if they could scare that out, like four first round picks,
yeah.
And they'd be like I don't know.
Because
otherwise it's like I don't know what that was all about.
I think they'd be game for that. But I think a couple things are true. Number one, I think the NFL probably gets in the ear of whoever has number, because that's been the trend. You do not leak this in any way. You create as much confusion as you can. At the same time, I do not believe that Steve Keim, who spent months drafting a quarterback last year, trading up for one to draft Josh Rosen, less than a year later, is convinced he made the wrong pick and go picks. And it's about fitting with your new head coach, who's one of the more different head coaches the NFL's seen in a long time.
I don't think the NFL is in the team's ears.
I absolutely do.
I think it behooves the team to keep their cards close because, like you're saying, you never know when a Godfather offer can show up. If you let everyone know we're taking this guy, then people are probably going to be – teams will be less likely to – try to get into business with you. I think ultimately the Cardinals played it the right way.
I think this time around, probably there was vibrant conversation up until the very end, but there are other years where you could just say who you want to pick and get that guy under contract well before. That's how it used to be back in the 80s and early 90s. It's a mandate to not do that.
Like, I love Rosen, but this trade just makes the Cardinals so much more interesting. I mean, I will, as much as I love Rosen, Kingsbury and Murray makes them so watchable compared to Rosen and Byron Leftwich.
So much more juice than this time last year.
And then you got Nick Bosa chasing him down twice a year. You got him facing off against Russell Wilson in like the short quarterback bowl twice a year. The NFC West is the most interesting division in the league again.
And through two picks, Mark, and we did the first annual Mark Sessler mock draft, you were 2 for 2.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you're feeling good.
I would like to, if we just didn't want to comment on the mock draft from that point on, I'd feel good about where we landed.
You were on fire. So the Niners go with Bosa, safe pick, the right pick. It sounds like this guy is supposed to be, I mean, we had him on our Super Bowl show, maybe not the most lively interview that we've ever done.
Also not his job, so that's
maybe
fine.
Some people don't love the man's politics in his Twitter.
He's already addressed the San Francisco media about that. Basically saying he was like a kid scrolling through Instagram, liking some things, basically just backpedaling as hard as he can. And who can blame him?
If you are kids out there, if you are a highly touted college prospect, don't do anything on social media. You don't get anything out of it. Kids need to be taught this in college. So Bosa to the Niners, then the Jets at number 3, so much talk about, whether New York would trade down, and as has become a tradition in the newsroom, during the Jets pick, I go to the middle of the newsroom, the horseshoe, as it's called internally, because they have this whole setup. I don't even know what the technology is, but it's a direct line from the actual event, and you get the picks in before anybody else knows them.
I mean, it's essentially radio technology, but yes.
I would say it's a little more advanced than that, but yes, there is some type of transmitting going on for sure. But finding out, yes, they stay put at 3. They draft Quinnen Williams again, and the Jets have been doing this, Greg, for several years now. The draft cognoscenti speaks and says this is the best player potentially on the board, and the Jets, who keep picking high because they keep on being terrible year after year, are grabbing these highly touted prospects.
I think they lucked out that no one, I mean, it depends what kind of offer they were going to get, but I think ultimately if you can get the guy who is the consensus number one for a lot of people without moving, who I don't want to move down.
Well, it reminds me of the Williams pick.
There's a lot of people that believe this draft was two great players in Williams and Bosa, and then Murray was kind of in his own category, and then a pretty big drop-off. And so it was nice to be number 3 in this draft.
I also think this is a team that really wanted Anthony Barr, thought they had him. It's not the same position, but like to go and use this pick, because they could have traded down and gotten someone that we'd speculate over whether it was a good pick. This is the dude where it's like New York's front, and now you have Sam Darnold, Le'Veon Bell, your defensive line looks nasty. Mike Maccagnan is starting to show that he can potentially build something here.
It's not often that you see a 3-4 defense, and the reports are that Greg Williams is staying in a 3-4, correct?
Yes.
It usually has a 4-3.
Yes.
But it's not often you see a 3-4 defense where the defensive ends are pass rushers. It's usually the outside linebackers, and the Jets are going to have, it looks to me like Quinnen Williams and Leonard Williams at defensive end, they're going to be counted on to bring the
heat. Yeah, they'll have to be, they'll have to change, like every team, they'll change it around. You would think 2-3-4 man lines, but you will have sometimes where they're going to have the new school Williams wall.
Yeah.
I mean, Pat Williams and Kevin Williams, you know, great men, tall men.
Outside of the star cap fiasco.
Large men that played in Minnesota. But I think
fun on both
star
occasionally.
Caps. Yeah, I mean, it's like Greg completely ignores star caps. That's
seafaring men.
I mean, our listeners are too young to remember star caps. I'm just saying
this
Williams wall has got a potential to just have a little more firepower and just overtake that Williams.
One thought I had, because the Jets only have 5 picks in this draft, and the whole idea was like they need to trade back because they need to fill in a lot of holes. Is Leonard Williams expendable? And I thought, is there a chance he gets moved today? No. It didn't happen. It's unlikely he will. They have a good problem there, where they have a ton of depth and some really great potential.
I mean, they thought that the NFL changes fast, too. It's like they thought they had that with Sheldon Richardson
right. And
Mo Wilkerson.
My fear was that they were going to trade back because they felt that they had to, and then it wouldn't be it would be an underwhelming return, and then they would botch the 14th pick. This is the safe, simple move. And sometimes, you know, it's better just to go with the safe move and it could pay off big dividends. Now, Wes, here comes the first big surprise of the draft. The Raiders at number four. Cleveland Farrell, edge rusher out of Clemson, was a guy that was in a lot of mocks. I'm not sure where he was on the Mark Sessler mock, but he was 10 to 20 range, I believe. That type of that's where he was falling a lot. The Raiders, and there was a report, maybe it was even rap sheet, said, hey, Raiders are going to make a splash at number four. Well, nobody thought Farrell was going this high, but the Raiders decided he was their guy at number four.
Everybody loves his character. Everybody loves his college production. The question scouts have is, why would you take a guy who's not a explosive athlete as an edge rusher as a top five pick? And that's the consensus from scouts, that this guy is not explosive enough to go that high. It seems like a reach for a character guy, a tone setter for your organization. That said, it's early. We have no idea what he's going to be.
Mayock said in a post-draft interview with NFL Network that he was absolutely trying to set the tone for the types of people and that they believe this was exactly the type of person. It reminds me a little bit of Aaron Curry when he was drafted by the Seahawks, which very similar in that, like a guy. Well, no, I just mean everyone loved that pick. And he was talked about as like the greatest character guy in the world, super safe. But there were questions at the time. Yeah, but it's a little weird to take a linebacker that high that can't really rush the passer. So who knows?
He got a few comparisons to Terrell Suggs. Another scout told Bob McGinn, who we've been leaning on heavily this weekend.
Does he get paid by the reference on our show? Because
he gets mentioned this week on a lot of shows, but one scout called him a solid player. He'll squeeze out one or two Pro Bowls. I mean, obviously the Raiders feel very differently.
You want more
about
than that at number four.
Am I wrong that our newest version, at least just for this week, of the Chiefs wide receivers having no touchdowns that one season is that, yes, the Raiders had 13 sacks last year. We have heard that roughly 47 times.
You mocked them to 22nd to the Ravens, by the way, Mark Cleveland Farrell.
That was the Terrell Suggs connection. You know, you lose Terrell Suggs, so you get a lesser version
of
him.
It tells me with the Jets and the Raiders, I mean, that I don't think there were trades down. My guess, I mean, Mike Mayock was going through trade down boot camp earlier this week, so you know he was ready. You know, on the phones. I bet I think both those teams really wanted to trade down. I think the Raiders were hoping to trade down and still draft Farrell. And I don't think there was anyone really interested in moving up for anyone in this draft. It just wasn't happening. What can you do?
Mayock fanboys are a little bit confused, a little bit perplexed, a little bit shook, because this was an anti-analytics draft. They pick up a box safety at the end of the first round and a running back. Two positions that analytics say you should not be investing heavily in.
Didn't they like Farrell, though? PFF, I thought he was their dude.
I don't know, but see, I don't get it. Well, they were the top, like Abrams and Jacobs were the top players at their position on Daniel Jeremiah's board.
Of course, but analytics, they just don't invest
that much.
And then
Jacobs was a top 25 guy in a lot of people's board, too. So I don't buy that with running back. It's like if you can get a quality running back later in the first round, give me a break.
Josh Jacobs was.
Don't have too many rules.
We'll stick with the Raiders for a second here. So, yeah, they pick 24. They take Josh Jacobs, the running back out of Alabama. He's the only running back that comes off the board in round one, and he came off at 24, where he was mocked a lot in that area. And we heard a lot of Charlie Garner. We've heard a lot of that this is the Raiders have their new Charlie Garner. Well, we'll see. But, the jury's obviously, it's still out, but you can't really say yet whether Gruden royally screwed up what he did when he took over the job. We got to see how all these things shake out. But when you do look at the offense, that offense, and Wes, I know you're not a fan of the Raiders or how they're going about this, but the offense with Antonio Brown, and you got this new kid at running back. I mean, you have Tyrell Williams. They have a chance to be a lot more productive on offense. There's no doubt about it.
They are one of the most upgraded units in the entire NFL, and I think you could make a strong argument that Derek Carr is the biggest offseason winner in the entire league.
Yeah, and the fact that he had three picks and didn't seem interested in getting into the quarterback mix.
They pick up a left tackle.
Cost me some sandwiches, by the way.
A left tackle, an entire new receiving core, and the best running back in the draft.
I like the skill positions, and I think Jacobs, by all accounts, I think seems like a safe pick. The offensive line could be terrible, though. I mean, Colton Miller was almost a disaster, and Brown, you just have to worry that he can back up what he did last year.
But there's still guys left in the draft for that. I mean,
Trent Brown. That
to
is.
Mayock's point on picking certain types of people, Josh Jacobs grew up for sections of his life being homeless, sleeping in cars. His family went through a lot, and he's now being compared to someone coming out of Alabama who they said has a little bit of Mark Ingram and a little bit as a receiver of Alvin Kamara all in one.
And to your point, Dan, you do have to give them time because, I mean, they're just getting their guys in place. They've only played one season. They added LaMarcus Joyner, who's going to be playing next to Jonathan Abram. So now you kind of get a better feel of, like, okay, what's a Gruden team? I'm with you. You
know, they've added four safeties this offseason.
Jonathan Abram was their third and final pick of the round. He's a kind of a physical safety, a Landon Collins type. Well, that wouldn't be bad. All right, let's move on. So we talked about the Giants. They shock everybody. A big newsroom gasp when Daniel Jones was selected, the Duke quarterback by the Giants. And Giants fans will cringe and also point out, the fatalists will point out Dave Brown also. The Duke quarterback. One of the darker periods.
I think I
periods.
Mentioned that downstairs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not exactly the
he
same.
He was a supplemental draft pick that became the replacement of Phil Sims. Didn't go anywhere.
I mean, is that just a, yeah, it's like number six overall. That's the thing that's crazy.
Yeah, it was a shock. And especially, yeah, with Gettleman saying he didn't want to reach and all that. But we touched on that. So let's move now to number seven. And here is a nice pick, Mark, for the Jacksonville Jaguars, a team that has a defense that didn't have its best season last year but has plenty of potential. And then all of a sudden, Josh Allen, a guy that was mocked as high as, you know, two or three, he was connected to the Jets a lot. If he falls to seven, so the edge rusher out of Kentucky now joins a Jacksonville D that got that much better.
I don't have a problem with that. I do like the fact that it's the second draft in a row where someone named Josh Allen was drafted seventh overall. We could live for 300 more years on the earth, and that will not happen 2 years in a row again. And
you could probably even go further than that. Same exact name, same
22,000 years we could be
nailed
doing
it.
Well, someone asked the question, I believe, you know, they gave away a season tickets for 100 years at the beginning of this draft.
Yeah.
Well, like, what's the odds in Vegas where the Raiders are moving right now that there will be an NFL in 100 years?
Low.
I mean, because I think you got to at least put it on the board. There won't be a human race in 100 years. At least that's, like, possible.
Very possible.
Right? So then, wait. I'm just saying, you might not get the 100 season tickets here.
You know, humans think so highly of the realm that they exist within. We're the generation that's going to bring down humanity or the next generation. No.
The next generation, not our
humans generation. Humans are going to be here. The football's going to be here.
I think it's a long shot. I'm just saying
everybody
you put it on
relax.
The board. It's a long
everybody
shot you
relax.
Put it on the board.
It's not that humans won't be here. It's that humans and artificial intelligence will merge into one and become a new
okay.
species.
Thank you. Bingo.
Okay. So you think they'll do the NFL draft then?
But then the NFL won't be gone. That'll be a badass football league.
Well, it could be like there's another sport that has overtaken the NFL.
Mm. But does that mean NFL cease to exist?
I mean, the NFL has some issues they need to figure out to still be.
I'm just saying, I feel like I'm putting my money on the league being around. And
Greg's giving me the I'm not allowed to mention these things, I guess.
No, I like that. Yeah. I was more thinking like Josh Allen also kind of like a basic name in 100 years. I feel like with the cyborgs, we're going to have like way more interesting names.
Well, one note, like number five, the Bucks, Devin White. Love that pick. We can move on. We don't have to discuss it at all, but it was a...
Oh, did I skipped over that? That's
an instant bad. Impact.
Let's go back to that.
We've been, you know, the Bucks have been skipped over on NFL
many times.
About 100 times.
So, yes, we should talk about the fifth overall pick. Bucks fans were going nuts just now for the last 4 minutes, so credit to Mark Sessler. Yes, they get Devin White, the linebacker of LSU, the reigning Dick Butkus Award winner. This guy's a home run, Wes, right?
This feels like not only one of the safest picks, but also brings a ton of upside. I don't think anybody had a bad word to say about this. Devin White had the film and the numbers. He's got everything.
I tell you, you know, who's had a good, or at least a potentially good offseason here? Todd Bowles. Got a chance to have a nice rebound, taking over one of the worst defenses in the league in terms of production, and has a lot of players there to work with.
Just has to hope they don't cut Gerald McCoy.
All right, so Allen goes to the Jags. And then T.J. Hockenson, the first tight end off the board out of Iowa, goes to the Detroit Lions, picked eight overall. This is the Mackey Award winner, Mark. And that is a
obviously, I know that.
Top tight end. And the guy was an absolute stud at Iowa, and he is, Mark, an important addition to a Lions offense that could use a little more firepower. And, you know, after whiffing kind of on Eric Ebron about 5 years ago, they weren't afraid to jump back in and invest in a tight end, and maybe they hit on this one.
The Lions last year ranked 31st in receptions and receiving yards at the tight end position. So it's a need, and Iowa has pumped these dudes out because this is where George Kittle came from. But this is not George Kittle in the current incarnation from the scouting reports. It sounds, and Wes, you mentioned this during the mock draft episode, where putting him in the top 10, not a lot of people, not everyone agreed with that idea, that he's a very good, he can give you essentially sort of a safe, he's a safe tight end, but he's not necessarily a star tight end and brings blocking and some receiving skills. So I don't know. I don't think it's a blow you away next Rob Gronkowski type guy.
No,
but this could be one of the most improved offenses in the league, because at the end of the year last year, there was no Kerryon Johnson. There was no Marvin Jones. And then those guys are healthy. You add Danny Amendola. You add Hockenson, Jesse James for whatever he is. But just being healthy and adding a couple of new guys, they could be improved.
I think draftniks need to calm down with the whole positional value thing. Let's take down positional value. Eventually, people get too carried away. How many defensive end busts do you need to have in the top 10 to 12 to like just right. allow a tight end to be drafted? It's like a worthwhile tight end absolutely changes your team. Let's allow
it. Well, also, it's not 2001. 2019, tight end, arrow up.
Mark, let's just try to be diligent in the branding. It's not just our mock draft. It was our first annual Mark Sessler mock draft.
That's why you're here. I mean, I
got to breeze
through
sucker.
That and you correct it.
We want to just imprint that in every football fan's mind.
Well, I mean,
noted.
Only if
I will not, you know, there's not a whole lot more reasons to mention that exercise from here on out.
How many more hits do we have?
Not a whole lot.
How are we doing so far?
I mean,
when he was making his predictions.
The Raiders corrected. They took the running back. I noted. They did not trade up, and they also did not take Daniel Jones at number 4.
Oh, yeah, so we gave you a halfie for Josh Jacobs, and you got 1 and 2.
A halfie.
So you got.
And the over/under was 3. Somehow I came under.
You got 2.5 total.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a mess.
Wait, didn't you have Jacobs?
Everyone.
Yeah, I got a half.
Everyone had Kyler Murray and Bosa, so you could almost argue.
And almost everyone had Jacobs to the Raiders too. So
right.
I'm still going to give you a full one for that.
Let's see what the crowd thinks about Mark's first mock.
Oh. Look, if I can make them smile, what else am I here for?
All right, let's move on. The Bills, they had been rumored to be maybe interested in trading up. Instead, they stay put at 9, and they get the guy a lot of people said they wanted, Ed Oliver, the defensive tackle out of Houston. We slandered the man a little bit on the first annual Mark Sessler mock draft. There was a bunch of comments about him being a potential knucklehead. We didn't add a lot of more context to that. What should be known, though, and we referenced it but didn't really dig in, is how good this guy was during his 3 years with Houston. Mark, do you know what the college football's top interior defensive lineman award is called? Like, what do you get? It's the Outland Trophy.
No, I've certainly heard
of it. Well, guess what? Ed Oliver's got that in his case. And the Bills offense, Bills defense, rather, they have to be thrilled to get this guy fall into their lap. And it's a team that is adding pieces throughout this offense.
A great landing spot for him, because I think he landed on a defense that knows how to use him. I mean, maybe not moving to Buffalo and all that. I'm just saying, like, maximize his gifts. And that's one thing I like about Oliver, reading about him. He was a top-level defensive lineman 3 straight years. And so teams adjusted. They knew what was coming when Ed Oliver was stepping on the field. And he still produced year after year, which is very tough to do at the collegiate level. A lot of these guys are one-year wonders, or there's someone like Noah Fant who has one great year where he maybe would have gotten drafted higher if he came out early, then doesn't do as well. He did it year after year. A lot of people had him as a third or fourth player in this draft, and they get him at 9.
They did have the second ranked defense, the Bills, but Next Gen Stats notes that they had the third lowest pressure rate from the interior defensive line. So he fills a need too. I love that the scouts mix their, he's all over the map. One guy says he's a playmaking rascal. Someone else called him blunt, immature. So a bit of a wild package. Sometimes, you know, when you meet those people and they're your friends, they're the most interesting friends.
Hey, here's a newsflash. Most of these players are immature. They should be. I mean, like, right?
No, they should.
On a relative scale.
Well, I don't think that's the immature they're looking for here.
I don't mean like...
I think you misspoke, but I get your point. No, they shouldn't be immature, but it's normal for a... For a 21
their age,
year old
it's almost impossible not to be immature.
Right, but you're throwing $10 million at them. They should not be immature.
Let's move on. That's a debate that we will unpack in greater detail on the maturity
slash
immaturity
podcast. They got a chance to mature, you know, as you get into your 20s.
Sure, I get your point.
That's absolutely true.
It's possible both are correct in various ways.
Now, the second gasp for me on draft night, first was the Duke kid. Dave Brown part two going to the Giants at six. Well, they hope it's not Dave Brown part two. The second was the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's a whole new world. They trade into the top 10, the Steelers. Yeah, they make a deal with the Denver Broncos and they give their 20th pick, the first round pick 20th, as well as a second rounder and a third rounder next year to move up 10 spots and take Devin Bush, the linebacker out of Michigan, another big time prospect who can make an immediate impact on a team that hasn't been the same in the middle since Ryan Shazier's injury. Your thoughts on this move, Chris Wessling?
Well, just on geography alone, we know that the Steelers are always get things ahead of Cincinnati because Pittsburgh comes before Cincinnati in the flow of the Ohio River. Mm. And this has been going on for 43 years. The Steelers just bang the Bengals all over the place. Happens every
day. I like that you're taking that back to essentially agrarian society where the river flow is producing
I know.
Tigris and Euphrates,
like
come on.
He's going like Huck Finn on us.
You've been hitting this hard all night, Wes. Do you have any sources that Devin Bush was indeed going to be the Cincinnati pick at 11?
No, my sources are common sense and history. Of course the Bengals were going to take that guy. They needed a linebacker. Every time they want something, the Steelers take it from them, and then their trash just flows down the Ohio River to Cincinnati, and the Bengals sign a guy after he busts from them.
You know, supporting Wes's...
I mean, I can't disagree. It seems well-reasoned, and he speaks with much confidence.
I've been watching it for a long time. And Devin Bush, they finally get their Ryan Shazier replacement. This guy seems like a can't miss. People love his character. They love his film. They love the numbers. He blew up the combine.
As the Pittsburgh organization, they make the right move. So if they go up to get somebody, I just feel confident that they're getting the right guy and a guy that's going to make an impact. It's much more likely that happens, given on the track record of the last 20, 25 years, than that it's a huge bust for them.
Especially when they're not drafting a cornerback.
Yeah, especially at that position. And he seems like one of the safer players in the draft anyways. To support, you know, Wes's theory here, my guy, Bengals coach Zach Taylor, you know, when asked they asked him about, you know, whether they would have taken Bush, and, you know, he answered the question just like Jonah Williams was there for us. That's who they took the tackle from Alabama. And it
was player on the board.
It wasn't exactly he didn't shoot down that theory totally, if you wanted to read between the lines.
So Cincinnati, yes, gets Jonah Williams, the tackle out of Alabama. When you get, you know, your number one offensive lineman on the board, that seems like a nice pick, but we'll never truly know. But
well, there are
Wes
scouts saying
points.
There are some people noted they thought Jonah Williams fit better as a center than a tackle. So I mean, but who knows?
People seem to be divided on that. There's a lot of people who think that he can stick at left tackle, not even right tackle.
Right. The the RotoWorld guys, you know, putting together their big board on their podcast, had him as a top five player in this whole draft, about as safe as it gets.
Opinions vary.
I mean, I don't know if their crew put as much offensive line tape study into it as our foursome did. So remains to be seen.
All right, the Packers. They picked 12, Rashawn Gary, the defensive end out of Michigan, a great athlete, seen by some as a boom or bust type prospect.
Very much so. Uh-huh. I mean, I think one of the most surprising things in this draft is that they didn't take an offensive player with their two picks. Not only that, but that they traded up back into the first round to take a safety. Gutekunst just his defense wild. I mean, he's just like addicted to drafting defensive players. You, Dan, really wanted some weapons for Aaron Rodgers. Didn't get it with.
I didn't think it would have surprised me, especially after we read that expose in ESPN about, you know, Rodgers is already working with a bunch of young guys to bring in a rookie. That would have been even more of a challenge potentially based on the personalities inside that building. But yeah, it is a little surprising. I don't know if they have enough weapons around.
Well, just with two picks and the fact that they spent so much money on three starters in free agency and now they just picked up a third edge. It's not that crazy, but what was your stat, Wes, on the defensive backs that they've taken in the last three drafts?
They've taken, I mean, we haven't even gotten to the second round yet this year, and they've taken five defensive backs in the first two rounds of the last three drafts.
I mean, that tells me that Mike Pettine's voice has been heard two straight off seasons because his number one thing, you want your press corners, you want your defensive backs to be solid, and they have done nothing but dress that team with Mike Pettine-type players.
That defense better
dominate.
Be a lot better.
Right, it's a lot.
Well, then he
got it. It's a lot of pressure. It's hard to build around defense in 2019. The Vikings have done a pretty good job with it, you know, so it's not impossible.
And where did it get them last year?
One thing I say about their offense is I think Aaron Rodgers and their coaches like Geronimo Allison more than your average fan would believe. I think his injury really hurt them last year, and they missed him terribly.
The Dolphins at 13 take Christian Wilkins, the defensive tackle out of Clemson. You guys could add whatever you want. I want to play one clip from the NFL Network broadcast. Daniel Jeremiah, of course, this was his big arrival as the number one draft analyst for the network. But he's not above a little sneaky humble brag in a big spot.
He's my seventh overall player in this draft. I did not think he would end up falling all the way down there. That's why I ended up putting him in my mock draft with the Miami Dolphins, just because of the connection. So that's why I put him to Miami, but if you asked me and gave me some truth serum, I said, there's no way this kid's going to be there. He actually was.
And I just wonder, Mark, and
that was a good job.
I'll set you up on this. I wonder, after he heard about the first annual Mark Sessler mock draft, he wanted to make sure that he was the guy letting everyone in America know, I'm still the mock man, and I'm nailing picks.
I don't doubt that. I mean, you could tell early on in the broadcast that, and I thought he did a great job tonight, we all do, but there were a little bit of nerves after what we produced the other day, just how do you match it? But then by the time you got to pick 13, I think he felt very confident that he would outshine what we did a few days ago. It was clear that he had done more homework, and it was paying off.
The Falcons take Chris Lindstrom, a guard from Boston College, at 14, addressing their offensive line in front of Matt Ryan.
Then turned around and traded back into the first round to take Irish Gary.
Irish Gary.
Caleb McGarry.
This goes with the theory. I forget who threw it out the other day. No one ever likes it when you draft interior linemen. Like, I saw a little bit on Falcons Twitter. Like, they're not excited for two guards or two guard centers.
I get it.
Especially after an offseason where they signed a couple of different guards. But that offensive line has been terrible, so what are you going to do?
But you know what? If Matt Ryan has more time and Devonta Freeman is healthy and running through big holes and they're scoring 30 points a game in October, you know, all of a sudden they're going to be okay with the draft.
Yeah, Matt Ryan and Devonta Freeman are big winners out of this draft because, like Greg said, that offensive line was terrible by the end of last year.
Okay, next big quarterback pick. Yes, the Washington Redskins at 15. A lot of speculation. Will they trade up? Will they get cost me sandwiches because nobody traded up into the top five? The Redskins stay put at 15, Greg. And this, a lot of people are really excited about this draft for Washington. And it started with Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback out of Ohio State, one of the most highly touted guys in this draft, going to Washington as the next big thing there with Alex Smith's future in doubt.
Well, there's all these reports that this was directed by the very top of the organization and that there was some disagreement over, you know, who the coaching staff would actually want to take. And so you can separate two things. The process to get to this pick could be problematic. Haskins might be stepping into a very difficult situation, but this is a great result for them because they didn't trade up. They sat at 15. Jones ends up going to the Giants. They don't have to do anything, burn any later picks, and they get a quarterback that a lot of people believe has a good chance to be a pro quarterback. And in terms of the traits that I did watch, you know, more of Haskins than anyone, than any of the other quarterbacks in the draft. I think he has traits that transfer, which is accuracy, that he sees the field, he anticipates. I mean, and his just numbers with accuracy were really strong for like a West Coast Jay Gruden type of quarterback. Like the comp that QB football guru, I forget, on QB film room on Twitter, his comps were Cousins and Andy Dalton with better arms. Two guys that Jay Gruden's coached. So it actually feels like it could be a good fit for them. You just feel like Jay Gruden might only have like 1 year to get it done.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but they had one of the most intriguing first rounds. I mean,
absolutely.
Two boomer bust players, they swung for the fences. So we won't know for a couple of years how they did, but they added some talent.
Well, like, they also gave up a second round pick in next year's draft to move up for their second pick.
I mean, maybe more teams should have the owner step in and run the process in the first round. Mm-mm. I don't know. Mm-mm. No?
You know, I think Washington, like Arizona, even more so than Arizona, because after the Alex Smith injury, this team just seemed to be floating, deep in the Atlantic Ocean. There's a little hope in the room now. And if you're a fan of the Redskins, a team that wasn't even drawing well in their own building last year, now maybe, we can get behind the kid and we could take why you left.
I don't know. Like the whole, it's true, but the whole Redskins home attendance thing, I think has been mentioned on this show like 9 or 10 times. It's like the team largely sucked after Thanksgiving. I get it.
But every other team in the NFC East,
Wait, what is your theory, Mark?
My theory?
That they don't have problems?
I think the Redskins fans have endured one of the less appealing teams outside of a season here or there for a long, long time. And that chips away at people spending their disposable income on a product doomed to fail.
I guess I'm surprised because the NFC East in general has been such a bedrock of the NFL that
not when you're getting thumped by the other three teams in the division all the time,
but they don't. I mean, they're not, when you look at their record over the last, they're not like a cellar dweller constantly.
They've won one playoff game in the 20 years since the new ownership came in.
They haven't been terrible. They've just been sort of a floater.
That's pretty bad.
Boring. I'm just saying NFCs, those stadiums sell out good, bad or bad teams, good team or bad team. In this case, they have not been drawing.
I just think
why
it's funny.
Do you keep smiling? What is
I just
so
think
funny
it's funny
this?
That we keep bringing up the Redskins at home attendance. Are they pumping in fake crowd noise like some other teams? No.
Well, Haskins, it's too much. The problem is it's too much to ask for Haskins. I think Haskins would have a chance in the right situation, but they've got problems on their offense. And Jeremiah, DJ predicted he'll be their week one starter. I think he's going to have a chance against
Case
Keenum.
Oh, what? He's got to beat out Colt McCoy and Case Keenum?
He's got to have a chance. And we didn't even mention Montez Sweat. The second pick, why he was such a big risk. There was like some heart concerns, but otherwise people thought maybe a top 10 type of talent.
There was a dispatch from RG3 on Twitter.
Oh no.
he seems to have toned it down. It's talk about immaturity and getting more mature. And we're going to talk about it on the immaturity/maturity podcast kind of later this offseason, but he has made strides and he had this to say, a man that has accumulated West some wisdom. You didn't draft the young man for nothing. You did it because you believe in the young man. You did it because you need a quarterback. Don't give up on him prematurely. He is your investment.
Mm.
Give the kid time to prove himself. Congrats, young gun. Enjoy every second of it.
Like, who's he directing that tour?
The Redskins. It's kind of like you gave up. I was once that boy, and I wasn't given the chance to play up to my abilities because that team didn't believe in me and didn't stand by me. He's saying stand by your man.
It's ridiculous. The Redskins stood by him. The fans, loved him. Tony Kornheiser called it the era of unbridled optimism. The only thing that happened was he stopped playing well anymore.
Well, and there's a lot of similarities because Dan Snyder, the owner, has a connection, a family connection to Haskins. I mean, his son played with him. Haskins is from Maryland. They're believed to have been very active, the ownership in pushing this pick. And no one stuck up and stood by RG3 more than the ownership there. I mean, according to the reports, like that's what kept him on that team and even relevant for a few more years than he would have been.
And it should be stated, I think, maybe hindsight is 2020 because he wanted to play. He was young and all that. But a lot of people say the Redskins ruined his career by putting him on the field and not sitting him down with that knee injury that led to a fairly catastrophic knee injury in the playoffs that year. And he was never the same player.
Well, now that's a valid argument.
That might
but
have
not believing in him. I mean, why does everything he write or say have to be a bumper sticker? I just don't get it.
I get that.
Back
I
to totally this, get that. This one.
Okay, let's move on. Guys, if you have something to say about Brian Burns going to the Panthers, defensive end out of FSU, we talked about Dexter Lawrence going to the Giants, and Garrett Bradbury, the center from NC State, supposed to be a great prospect going to the Vikings. Or Jeffrey Simmons, the defensive tackle from Mississippi State, going to your Tennessee Titans. Speak now or
I
forever
think
hold
Brian
your
Burns, some people had him higher. He's a little bit polarizing, but the Panthers, who I think just by collective memory, you just assume they have this great defense. They were 27th in sacks last year. Outside of Mario Addison, you don't have a lot of pass rush. So I like the idea of making this the where you go with this pick.
I think they're thrilled how the draft fell, and I think they probably thought the Falcons would have taken Brian Burns at 14.
One scout says that Brian Burns runs like a scalded dog.
Which scout?
Hopefully people have stopped scalding dogs by now.
Fair point. A second scout, according
to the article I read.
One scout said something, then a second scout.
We're having two conversations. What were you talking about?
I would just hope people have stopped scalding dogs by now. That way they don't have to run.
What about the news? What about the news in Australia that there's a feral cat? And we have a great listenership in Australia. There's an overpopulation of feral cats. I saw this, an alert on my phone from the New York Times. And they, humble brag. And nice subscription. It's a great paper. The great lady. No, but they have such a problem with feral cats that they are now dropping poison sausage into areas of high concentration, and that's just the first wave of killing tens of thousands of cats in Australia. What's going on?
I totally get it. If you remember, we had a feral cat come into our yard and give birth to five feral kittens, and it sent our household into total chaos for 6 months. Drop the poison sausage.
This reminds me of the big Tybee Island coyote controversy of 2012.
Take us through it.
Well, there were a couple of coyotes were basically terrorizing the island because they were taking cats and dogs and killing them, and people worried about small children. So the mayor, one of my good friends, was really up against it. He had to decide do you put down the coyotes and really piss off the animal rights people, or do you let the coyotes run wild and then people are going to stop voting for you because they're worried about
people
the kids
are banging on your door. That's why being a mayor is a tough job.
Well, then here's where it got really thorny.
Yeah.
Vigilantes took it into their own hands.
Oh, no.
And there was a dead coyote on the beach one morning, shot.
You know, you're basically giving the plot of Jaws, only you're substituting coyotes for a shark.
Almost to it.
I mean,
this isn't fiction.
Yeah, I mean, Australia wants to let loose some coyotes, forget it. It's over. I mean, that's a pretty big, I wouldn't say, problem plaguing the Los Angeles area, but you can't leave your cats out. The coyotes are going to get them. If you live in the mountains, forget it. Everyone, you got about a year till your cat's going to get murdered.
Yeah, I mean, encircling back to cats.
I know lots of people. You know, it's like, they're like, oh yeah, our cat, he didn't come back last night.
Circle of life, Dan.
When it comes to cats, we don't trust them, I believe, as a group. At least I certainly don't. I think, Dan, you agree with me. And if I have a guy friend that owns a cat, that guy friendship is not going to last long. I don't trust him.
I think that's a ridiculous statement. I like cats,
but it's what I believe. You have a different opinion,
right? No,
so it's not ridiculous. You just have a different.
Oh, it is. Like racists, have their own beliefs. I can still think
this is not.
Are you calling Mark a catist?
I mean, I think all of God's creatures are beautiful,
except for
cats.
No,
you don't, Craig.
I'm allergic.
You certainly
to those
do not think that.
All right, pick 20.
Like that Garrett Bradbury pick, by the way, for the Vikings. Operation Save Cousins.
Yeah, they better. They got a big investment in that, man. All right, the Broncos trade with the Steelers. The Broncos use that 20th pick to select Noah Fant, the other big tight end out of Iowa. You want to talk about one every 22,000 years. Iowa putting out two first-round tight ends in 1 year.
That's the first time it's ever happened, that same school.
Not only that, they had two tight ends taken before a single wide receiver was taken in the entire country.
That's
ridiculous.
I like this move. So many people had the Broncos mocked for a inside linebacker, which made no sense to me after they picked up Josie Jewell last year. It was not a position of need.
Double J.
But they didn't have anybody for Joe Flacco to throw the ball to. I really like this.
I love it. And they got a second-round pick out of it. I mean, they got the Steelers' second-round pick, which is pretty valuable for a Broncos team with a lot of needs. I don't care if, you know, he's a wide receiver or a tight end. He's ultimately just another pass.
You can't have Flacco running an offense without a viable tight end.
I agree.
The Seahawks are picking at 21. They trade out of the spot. The Packers jump in, and they give up their 30th pick along with two fourth rounders. So with that pick, the Packers take Darnell Savage, the safety out of Maryland. We talked about that. The Packers really going ham at the defensive side in terms of player acquisition. At 22, another trade. The Eagles trade into the Ravens spot to take Andre Dillard, a tackle out of Washington State, which really, really seemed to... first of all, Daniel Jeremiah called it the best draft pick of the night. The Eagles making the move up and getting Dillard, a very talented young tackle. And it really seemed to chap the Houston Texans, who thought they were going to be able to take Dillard potentially. Instead, they perhaps settle, we don't know, but perhaps settle on Titus Howard, a tackle out of Alabama State. So it seems like it's possible the Texans got banged by the Eagles, who jumped ahead of them and
big
took
spot.
Their man.
Shows the different organizational priorities. Like, the Eagles aren't even going to start Dillard this year, and they traded up for him. I mean, he's Jason Peters' presumptive replacement, but I doubt he's going to take Jason Peters out of the lineup. And so you have Lane Johnson, and he's only going to be a third tackle, and yet they traded up to get him. Meanwhile, you know, Dillard would be the most talented guy on the entire Texans offensive line.
I mean, Dillard was, of any college tackle, the highest rated in pass protection. They do talk about all these guys that, like, play in a two-point stance throughout college and don't have any real three-point stance. But I don't know. I mean, you're going to – so then it's an even playing field when you're drafting most of these dudes.
Titus Howard is interesting, but it's been pointed out, if you can't play left tackle at Alabama State, you're probably not going to play left tackle in the pros.
That pick reminded me so much of the Bengals pick of Billy Price a year ago, where everyone thought they were going to take Frank Ragnow, the center, and then they got taken one pick ahead of him. And so it was just like the fantasy draft where you're just like scrambling. And you just like take the next guy at that position. And it was a pretty big drop off between those two picks.
1 year later, the same thing happens to the Bengals again. So,
all right. So Josh Jacobs comes off the board at 24. At 25, the Ravens in that trade with the Eagles, they go and make a pick to add to their offense. And it's the first wide receiver off the board. Marquise Hollywood Brown, the wide receiver out of Oklahoma. Wes, you didn't like this pick.
No, it was a big debate in the newsroom. And I saw this last year. I saw this movie. John Brown, a 4'3 guy who's a deep threat and a little bit undersized, went underutilized, basically not utilized whatsoever once Lamar Jackson took over. I don't think Lamar Jackson is an outside the numbers, down the field quarterback. His throwing style is a pop gun arm. I just don't think he has that arm.
I would just say, I remember we've had these conversations about young quarterbacks to, like, give them a little time.
And
I think Jackson coming out of college, man, he threw a lot of pretty deep balls in college. And you definitely didn't see that much last year. But what Brown gives him that John Brown, what Marquise Brown gives him that John Brown definitely didn't, is those manufactured plays. I mean, he led the conference in yards after the catch, and a lot of those are on those short passes.
But he's a water bug. Those guys don't break tackles, and you are not.
He broke more tackles than any player in FCS. Sure.
Tavon Austin did too. I mean, what are we doing here? 166 pounds is 166 pounds.
I think if you're the Ravens, you need playmakers and you need guys that can stretch the field.
No doubt.
And even if he catches 30, 35 passes, if it's 20 yards per catch and he's making some plays downfield, that's a win.
I know, like, as a Browns fan, like, I didn't like the pick because you got to find someone to deal with him. They made him the perfect quarterback for this. He's also a guy that went from Baker Mayfield to Kyler Murray to Lamar Jackson.
I've just heard a lot of this Lamar Jackson can't throw stuff this offseason from a lot of corners.
I'm not saying he can't throw. My thing is, like, his strength is middle of the field.
He started 7 games, and for what he was asked to do, he was very successful.
He's a bust.
And get a lot better.
You can tell by the way he plays quarterback, he throws between the numbers and sort of not downfield. So I agree that they needed the receiver, and they need the skill position talent. I would have liked to have seen him go to a different team.
Ravens also don't have a great track record picking wide receivers early in the draft. Rashad Perryman being a notable example in recent years, but perhaps Brown will make a difference for them. We talked about Sweat going at 26 to the Redskins. The Raiders taking Abram, the safety out of Mississippi State. The Chargers, who had a, you know, I would say a sizey draft party in Santa Monica today.
It was impressive.
They had an NFL Network showed a wide shot. It seemed like there were several hundred people, maybe 1,000 people, who knows, at the pier. So
I mean, I'd argue
perhaps there are fans of this team here.
I agree with you. I'd argue the Santa Monica Pier wouldn't have been barren of humans.
We're, on a nice evening
with or without the party.
Well, but no, they promoted it pretty well. It's not too far from where I live. And throughout the week, you saw the sign, people, they're giving away free stuff. There's giveaways, there's food. And what when they had the little the Chargers logo on the Santa Monica Ferris wheel, I mean, up in the sky, you could see that for miles around tonight. It looked beautiful.
They packed the pier, but can they pack the stadium, Mark? We'll find out in a couple of years.
Mark was more annoyed by that.
I mean, it's like, I get it. They're from L.A., so we must...
I enjoyed it. If you can see a Ferris wheel with your team's logo from 5 miles away up and down the coast, that's a win.
If Roger's listening to the show, that is Mark, who says that football won't be around in 100 years and is not a fan of Los Angeles football. That is Mark Sessler.
Well, some of that is true.
Let's close this
out. What does that look for, Tampos? Ricky is just looking like she wants
to get out. Well, you're just like, if you get to see your team on a Ferris wheel, you're just like full of just... I just don't trust you.
It's not my team.
I just don't trust you.
Well, I did have cats, or my parents did.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of red flags about you. And you're like, oh, yeah, you see your team, and then next you're going to be like, you see the guy in Hawaii?
I mean the Chargers.
You get to see your favorite fifth team of the NFL.
I mean, if you're saying the Chargers get too much support, I think you'd be the first person to ever say that. Let's help this little team out.
Well, please.
They need some help.
It'd be nice for them in San Diego.
Where do the Chargers rank? I mean, after your favorite team, the Eagles, and your second favorite team, the Patriots, where do the Chargers
rank? Well, the Rams.
No, I would say the Patriots are obviously first.
You already walked out on them.
The L.A. teams and the Eagles are in that mix afterwards. They're all together.
All right, so the Seattle Seahawks picked 29th because they traded Frank
the
Clark.
The Reds are actually ahead of them right now.
Frank Clark, the Frank Clark trade that sent the defensive end to Kansas City. They take LJ Collier, the defensive end out of TCU, who's a guy with upside and Michael Bennett comps, which would fit in with Seattle. But the other, big news concerning this pick and the team connected to it, the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill, some really disturbing audio came out today. It was posted by a local news affiliate in Kansas City, I believe. Was it at Kansas City?
Yes.
It was Hill and his girlfriend, the two people that are connected to the child abuse investigation and that involved the young son that suffered the broken arm. It was reported this week or yesterday that there wouldn't be any criminal charges filed against either of the adults in this situation. This audio recording surfaces, of course, goes viral, gets blasted out, and then the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, Brett Veach, announces after the draft that Tyreek Hill will not be involved with the Chiefs in any capacity for, quote, the foreseeable future. You could try to read between the lines that this could very well be the final straw that, snaps the camel's back, and that's the end of Tyreek Hill in Kansas City. It certainly seems to be trending that way now.
Hard to know. I mean, the audio, it's tough. The entire situation is tragic. I mean, going back to his involvement with the same woman and child, in college, child wasn't even born then, but just looking at the statement that Veach made, it does feel like it crossed a certain threshold, you would think, for the team.
Oh,
right?
I think
but
that
we'll see.
There's probably more for them to look into and stuff, but absolutely. It just gives you total pause when you look at the transcript of that audio. I don't know. There's some things that are just, if there's any scenario where this is what's happened and they keep him, I can't figure out how to back that on any level.
And Veach also said in the statement that he found out about the audio recording in, quote, real time. So he found out, the team found out as the same time as the rest
of
the
It's just remarkable that 2 months ago, their report that Tyreek Hill was going to become the highest paid receiver in the league.
All right. So, and we'll keep an eye on that situation, obviously. Next time we'll bring a podcast to you is after the draft, so we'll see if there's any movement in the Tyreek Hill situation. The Giants trade back into the first round. We talked about that, DeAndre Baker. The Falcons trade with the Rams, swap with the Rams. So the Rams trade out of the first round entirely, and the Falcons take Caleb McGarry, tackle out of Washington. And finally, the Patriots.
Can I mention one thing about Caleb? One quote on Caleb Gary, and I'm sure he's massive. He's 6'7". Someone called him big, stiff robot guy. I'm sure there are other
big, stiff robot guy.
Yeah, I'm sure there are other qualities that he brings to the table. The Falcons must think so.
That's quite a name. The Patriots take a wide receiver, N'Keal Harry out of ASU. And Greg, that is a good pick. You liked that pick.
I did. I liked his interview, on NFL Network, like the cut of his jib, his attitude. But I like that it was the Patriots going against type, which is they have not drafted receivers in the first round. They have not drafted many outside receivers very high, physical receivers. His profile as a guy who can kind of be a big slot guy, win at the catch point, physical, run after catch, like, man, they need that. So it's just nice when the Patriots, pick need. And a lot of people, some people had him as the top receiver in the league.
Well,
I mean, in the draft.
There aren't many holes in Bill Belichick's resume, but drafting early round wide receivers is one of them. So maybe this is one of his few challenges left.
And put the Patriots logo on a Ferris wheel while you're at it, please.
all right. And the biggest news of the night, Ricky Hollywood, of course, that Taylor Swift dropped her new video.
Oh, yeah.
Which she announced she's in Nashville. I think she has a home down there. She announced it at the draft that it was dropping. And your thoughts on the new
Taylor really? At the draft?
She was there. She was on some show and said it was coming out. And Eric and I watched it in real time together.
Yeah, like 9:02. I was already watching it live. It's great. It reminds me of her older stuff, not Reputation album. The video feels like her. I haven't gotten the full effect yet. I can't wait till tonight at 3 a.m. when I'm driving home. I got to really bump it in the car to feel it.
So you don't drive off the road.
Well, I'm not worried about that. It's okay. I want the experience.
Got it.
Really immersing myself.
So it was like, oh yeah, remember how I said the old Taylor is dead? Oh, actually, that didn't work out too well. It didn't really test market. People didn't like that.
I love Reputation.
Now the old Taylor's totally back.
Only a cat guy would say something like that.
Oh. Such a cat guy comment.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you're right, though. You totally nailed it.
What did you think?
I loved it. I think she's much more comfortable in the lane that this single and exists. Yeah.
She seems super tall in
she
all
is
her
tall.
Videos.
Is this the Bad Blood
six
chick?
6 feet tall?
Yeah.
Is she that tall?
Taylor Smith.
One of my favorites.
All right. There you go. That's the round one recap. As we said.
Quick word about the Colt. Chris Ballard continuing to knock it out of the park.
What's your favorite type of frog?
3 second round picks this guy's got this
nice
year
job.
And 2 next year. This guy is building a perennial playoff power.
Right
house.
Draft for that, too.
I just wanted to get a little Colt.
He's not on your list.
So they didn't pick?
No, they traded out.
All right. Well, let's see what they do with the picks before we start throwing bouquets at the man's feet. I know he's had a great year or so.
I mean, it's just adding to the collection of bouquets that are already down there.
We'll be back Saturday when we recap the entire draft. We'll go through all the second through seventh round. We won't go through every pick, but things that jump out to us for the balance of the draft. Maybe share some winners and losers. Check in on our sandwich props. See how they're going for the draft. Not well for me. Some bad news in the back end of the draft, but we'll get to all that.
I think we'll all catch up to you in mediocrity. The reality is none of us have hit a single proposition. So
yeah, so
you have company.
It's a problematic situation so far. But thank you everybody for listening, and good luck to your teams the rest of the way. And that's it. That's all I got to really say. Good job, guys. Stan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Till Saturday night.
You think you've been brain damaged?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's no doubt.
Okay.
Let's dig into that a little
bit. I left some on the operating table. There's no doubt.